Welcome back. My name is Brett Statham. I'm a technical evangelist for Microsoft based out in San Diego. And I hope you guys are having a great time today seeing how easy it is to create games using Yo-Yo Game Maker, especially for myself. You know, I'm a developer, and so I love Yo-Yo Game Maker because I can use either very simple point-and-click drag-and-drop mechanisms to create my games, or if need be, I can dig into code. And again, as a dev, code makes sense, right? And if you're like me, you may have been looking at game creation from sort of two perspectives, right? How do I implement the game logic? But then also there's this, you know, how does my game sound and what does my game look like? And a lot of developers have a fear around sort of creating that audio and visual aspect of their games. And so in this session, my goal is to show you that, first of all, there's a number of free resources out there on the internet that you can use in your own games. But then I'll also show you how to overcome the fear of playing around with tools like Audacity or Inkscape to create your own sounds and graphics. And yeah, I think that you can actually do it yourself. If you spend just a little bit of time with these tools, you can create at least usable, if not fantastic, assets using the open source tools that are available. So in this session, like I said, we're going to start out seeing how to go about finding some assets. There's a number of repositories out there on the internet that you can download resources from. But then I'll turn around and show you how to create some sounds using some free open source tools, as well as how to go in and create graphics and even animations that you can use within your games. Now, one of the first things I'd like to remind you is to have fun. I've learned more from the tools like Audacity and Inkscape and GIMP and Game Maker by playing around and trying things that maybe seem whimsical or silly or fun or just stupid or whatever. But you got to sort of have that willingness to try things. And so don't let, you know, your own fears, you know, if you think you can't make sounds or if you think you can't make graphics, just get over it. Get in these tools, play around, have some fun. And, you know, do it like nobody's watching, right? The other thing I'll remind you of is that as I create resources or demos in this session here, you'll be able to download those through the msdneventsgameon.com/resources.htm page. So look for the demos that I create up there. So let's take a look at some of the different assets that are available out there on the internet. There's actually a number of different repositories that you can go to for both graphics as well as sounds that you can actually use in your games. Now, on the graphics side, I've listed one of my favorite resources, and that's a blog by Chris Hildebrand. It's 2dgameartforprogrammers.blogspot.com, and that's a resource that I've used myself, and in fact, it's a lot of that same guidance that I gathered from Chris Hildebrand on that blog that I'm going to be passing along when we get into creating your own graphics downstream. But he gives you some great tutorials on doing these yourselves, but he also has a lot of just great graphics that you can use in your own games. There's also opengameart.org, and that's a big repository. It's a community-driven site. Lots of different people contribute art to it, and there's both 2D and 3D resources out there as well, so look for things up on opengameart.org. Now, they've listed a number of other ones down there. In fact, Microsoft has in their clip art library, that's the office.microsoft.com/images, actually a number of vector images that you can pull into tools like Inkscape and customize for use in your games. But feel free to use the URLs. Like I said, these slides will be available. You can follow the links on the slide go browse around these different resources out there. From a sound perspective, freesound.org and pdsounds.org are both places that you can go to get sounds. But now hold on. Right? Can you just go around the internet and grab sounds and images and all that kind of stuff? Is that legal? Well, you're going to want to double check the license on the assets that you grab, right? So make sure that when you're getting a resource that you verify the license. And in fact, I would go so far as to say, don't use a resource if it doesn't state a license, because you'll want to make sure that there's not some license somewhere implied that you didn't pay attention to. So grab resources that have license restrictions clearly stated, verify that you're willing to conform to the license restrictions or requirements, and then use those assets and perform appropriately with them. Right. So be a good citizen. Don't steal other people's art, but use them where they're available. All right. So let's go take a look at some of these different assets that are out there. So I'm going to flip over to my browser here. And one of the first ones that I mentioned on that previous slide was this 2D game art for programmers.blogspot.com. This is a blog by a guy named Chris Hildebrand, and he's got a lot of excellent tutorials on creating your own graphics. Now, I know that's not really, you know, a repository of free graphics, but if you look at the bottom of a lot of his tutorials, he has links to either free files or ones that you can purchase pretty inexpensively from him out there. And so I've learned a lot from Chris on this blog. In fact, it's some of that same guidance that he's given me through this blog that I'll be passing on in this video here as well. But, you know, you see here he's helping you design weapons and all that kind of stuff. And so some pretty cool things that you can get out of his blog there. But if you want just true free, give me the graphics, opengameart.org is a great repository. And you'll notice that there's even, you know, 3D models and textures and all that kind of stuff. But if you come up to the browse menu, you'll notice there's a 2D art. And this is a great set of collections that you can use. And in fact, in there, notice there's even sound effects and music and other things like that that you can use in here as well. But if I go to 2D art, you know, you can just start browsing through things. If I drill in here, listen, in fact, I was just in here yesterday, so this looks like something new. But these are different sort of sprite sheets that you can use that have different sub-images for, you know, it looks like balloons and air and water and fire and okay, so some cool things there, right? And so I could drill into this. I can get sort of a little preview of the image in there, and then I could close out of that. And then down below, I can download the resources from that that's up there. But pay attention. Notice that in here, there's this attribution instructions, and this is part of that license. And they're basically saying, hey, look, if you're going to use this, this is actually licensed by the Creative Commons, and they're basically saying that you have to, the buy says you have to give attribution, and the SA is a share alike. And you can drill into that page there and read up on the licensing that's behind that. But basically, the attribution says that you have to attribute the way that the author requests it. And then share alike says that you can consume that. You can even modify it. You just have to make sure that you put it out as share alike, meaning that other people can consume it with the same license. So make sure that you agree to that. Basically, for a game, that just means that inside a game, on your credits page, you'll want to make sure that you use this attribution here to credit Julian for the work that he's done and that you're consuming there. All right. So feel free, browse around opengameart.org, have fun, but again, pay attention to those licenses as you go. And in fact, going back to a comment I made earlier, it's great that they clearly state the license and give you a way to make sure that you're conforming to it and that you know you're not going to have problems with somebody coming back later on screaming about you stealing their assets once your game goes viral. Right. Okay. So that's art assets. What about sound? If I go to freesound.org, this is a great library of sounds that you can come in and search for, right? So I could, you know, search for an explosion or something like that. And you'll notice that there's different explosions, et cetera. Again, though, pay attention to the licensing. So here it says this sound is licensed under Creative Commons, non-commercial license. So that may not be an appropriate choice for you because it's non-commercial. They don't want you using it in a game. But if I come down here, I see that there is one, and it basically just says attribution. So there shouldn't be a commercial limitation on that. But I could come in here and look at it. I can even preview the sound. And that could be either a sound that I like as it is, or maybe I could download that and, you know, modify it a little bit and use it inside my game. All right. So that's some great resources there. Again, hopefully you see that there's things out there available for you. And sorry, I was just noticing the tag cloud over here and some of the different names that showed up next to explosion. See, you got to have fun with this stuff, right? But anyhow, download these, have fun with them, pay attention to the licensing, and use the resources that are out there. All right, so plenty of free resources out there. Browse around, pay attention to licensing, but consume the things that are out there. Now, what if you don't find what you're looking for, right? So let's say I want an explosion sound, but I looked over on Freesound or PD Sounds, and I didn't find one that really met my needs, right? Maybe it didn't have the right tone, or it wasn't the right length, or it wasn't deep enough or short enough or whatever, right? So that'll certainly happen. Like I say, depending on the license, you may be able to pull those in and maybe just tweak them using a tool I'll show you in a little bit called Audacity, or maybe go in and just create one yourself, right? So there's actually a couple of different ways that we deal with sound in our games, right? There's sound effects, things like those explosions, right? Short sounds, they tend to be non-repeating, and you know, you play them once and then maybe play them again. You might even play them fast in succession, right? Like, you know, for a gun that shoots, you might play the bullet sound repeatedly, but the sound itself doesn't loop, right? You just play it over and over again every time the user pulls the trigger. The other type of sound that we deal with is background music, right? And those are typically longer pieces of sound. They tend to repeat, especially for background music. We want it to be able to loop in the background, so there's not, you know, some weird beginning and end of a song just in the middle of a game or something like that. Right. So those are two different things that you want to think about. And again, some of the free repositories that I was just pointing you to have both of those, both sound effects and music available. But if you want to get out and create them yourself, there's a number of great tools. And one that I discovered actually just the other day as I was preparing for this content was from a guy named Thomas Peterson. And it's FXXR. This is actually a utility that he created for an earlier Ludlum Dare, which is a gaming sort of hackathon, if you will, online gaming contest. And it's a cool little free utility. You can download it from that drpeter.se URL that's on the slide there. And he's got a handy little tool that creates very 8-bit sounding game type effects, right? So these sound kind of like your retro game effects, etc., but makes it really easy simply with the click of a button to get a randomized sound of a certain sort of class. And I'll demo that coming up here. But probably one of the tools that I've used most for sound is Audacity. Audacity is an open source waveform editor. When you think about sound types, right, you know, you know file formats like .wave or .mp3 or that kind of stuff, right? And when you open up a wave file and look at it, it's really this waveform. It's this digital representation of the analog sound that actually comes out of your speakers. And using a tool like Audacity, you can come in and edit that waveform. You can apply effects to it. You can even redraw the waveform or remove clipping or get rid of noise, some other cool things like that. But what you can't do with a tool like Audacity is change the original sound, right? You're not going to go in, for example, in a song and say, man, I wish I'd played that with an acoustic guitar instead of an electric guitar, right? You can't just go in and completely change or make it even more extreme. Gee, I wish I'd used a flute instead of a guitar, or I wish I'd played completely different notes. And so you can't really do that with Audacity, right? You're not going to pull out elements of a sound and completely change it. And that's where other tools like Soundation come in. Now, Soundation is a browser-based. It's actually a Flash application, so you can run this in your browser at soundation.com. And this is a sequencer. It's going to let you go in and drop in either looping sound files, like little waves or little MP3s that you can repeat over and over again, maybe to like make a cool drum beat in the background or something like that, or even to play synthesized instruments. So a synthesized drum kit or a synthesizer itself or even MIDI sounds or that kind of stuff. And Soundation is actually a free tool that you can use. There are premium and paid-for versions that give you additional sound loops that you can use, etc. But I'll demo both of these tools as we get into the demo. So let's do that. So remember I mentioned that the demo files that I create are going to be available through that resources page. So as I create assets here, remember you're going to be able to download at least a version of them from that resources page up there. And if I jump over here, I've actually got a demos folder. And in my demos structure, so you'll have access to all these, in the assets directory, I've got a copy of that Tom Peterson FXXR that I mentioned back there. And this is just an extracted version of the zip that you would download. So you always want to go back to his site. I've included his README. Opened up on the other screen there, but there it is. So you can go back and you know, get the latest version and all that kind of stuff. And I mentioned, I think it was drpeter.se for the website for this. But you don't need to install it. It's just this cool little utility here. So I'm going to go ahead and run it. And in there, then I can just click on these buttons over here to create sounds of different types. Let's try one. This is the pickup coin. There he is. So imagine, you know, you're playing some little 8-bitty, you know, platform type game and the user moves across one of the pickups, a coin or something like that, and that would be the sound that plays. Well, when I click it again, I get a different sound. Oh, okay. And I could just keep clicking this until I get one that I like. Ooh, that was kind of cool. It kind of had two in it there. And so I can play it again. Or I can export it out. If I decide I like that, I can come in, export that as a wave, and then I've got my sound effect, right? So this is pretty cool. I can just keep clicking this over and over until I get a sound that I like. And similarly, there's for lasers, different sounds, explosions, you know, et cetera. So have fun with this. I can just sit there and click buttons on this thing all day. If you really care about it, you can change from square waves to sine waves and whatever. You can grab these sliders and move them around. You can completely randomize and get a completely random sound out there every time. Or if you get a sound that you like, you can mutate it and get just slight variations on it. Cool. All right. So handy little tool. Let's go ahead and get a sound that we do like. I'll go get a pickup here. All right, there, good enough. And let's export that out as a wave. I'll go to my C, game on, demos, before sounds, you know, cool sound dot wave or something like that. Cool. And so now I've got that available for me, and I could use that somewhere, right? So back up here into before sounds, there's my cool sound.wave, and I could go use that somewhere. Well, or it could be that I want to customize that, right? And so that's where this other tool, Audacity, comes in. So I'm going to go run Audacity. Oop, and everything wants to start on my other screen today, so let me move Audacity over here. So this is Audacity. And in Audacity, then, I could go open up that cool sound if I wanted to, right? So I could drill out, go to my game on, demos, before sounds. There's that cool sound. Open it up. And Audacity says, hey, you've already got the source file, but why don't we make a copy of it so that we don't mess up the original? And you can choose to keep the original if you prefer. I'll let it make a copy. And there it is. So there's the sound file. There's the actual waveform that was produced by that utility, right? And so I can play it. And there's the sound. And I could tweak it if I wanted to. If I really cared, I could zoom way in until I can see the actual nodes, the little crosshairs on there. And I could even redraw the sound if I wanted to using Audacity. Probably not something you want to do a whole lot of. The only reason I tend to use that is for kind of removing clipping or clicks or that kind of stuff that I didn't want in an original sound file. But let's go ahead and zoom back out here. So I'll just use the mouse wheel. So there's that, right? Now you could also use Audacity just to create your own sound. So I'm going to go ahead and close this one up. And let's go make our own explosion sound, right? Now I've literally done this in a number of games. I also love pulling my kids in. And in fact, there's a I'll show you one here. If I go open this up from the after version of the sounds, there's a pigeon squash. So this is what we imagined a pigeon being like if or sounding like if you squashed it, right? And so I'll open this up and play it. And that's just my daughter playing around with different noises into the microphone. And we found one we liked, and that's the one we used. All right. But when you play it in a game and you time it with somebody landing on a pigeon, it kind of just makes sense that that's what a pigeon sounds like when you squash it. Cool. All right. So let's go make our own here. I'm going to close up and not save any changes here. And you'll notice that in here I can record. So right now it's set up to record from this microphone, but you want to pick the right mic. This is the one that I'm talking into right now, though. And it's going to play back my sounds through my headset, but you'll hear it here in the recording as well. And so I can go ahead and hit record. And there's my explosion sound, right? So let's go back and play it again. I'll skip to the start and hit play. Okay, and right. There's my explosion sound, and I let it keep recording. So now I can come in here, I can select the end of that, and just hit delete to cut that out. In fact, I want to trim in a little bit closer so that I get just the explosion sound, right? So I'm just using this eye bar up here to select portions of the waveform. Oh, skip back to start and hit play. All right. So there's an explosion. It's a little high, though, for an explosion. So this is where you can start playing around with the waveform, right? So I can see sort of this waveform here. And I'm not going to go edit it myself with the pencil. What I'm going to do instead is apply some effects to it. So I'm going to come in and change its pitch. And we're going to drop it down so it sounds lower. Maybe down 4 half steps. Or hey, you know what? Let's get lower. Let's go down 8 and preview it. Ah, okay. That's kind of cool. Yeah, that's not a bad little explosion sound. So we'll go ahead and hit OK on that and apply that effect, right? So now that's what that sound sounds like. Pretty cool. And then I could even come back in. And one of my other favorite effects that I use is G-Verb. And this is basically a reverb effect. And it's reverb is the effect that you get when you're in a big room. It's that echo sound, right, that you get coming back here. So I can come in and sort of tell it how big of a room I want it to be. Let's go ahead and stick this just sort of in the middle there. I want all of the original sound coming in. So I'll play the entire bandwidth of the incoming sound at its full level. But we'll let the reflections that come back be a little bit quieter. And I don't want the reflections to go on forever. So I'm going to dampen them out pretty quickly here. And I'll grab my damper up and preview that. Okay, and you can might hear that sort of echoey sound behind that now. So that sounds good, right? And that's not a bad little explosion sound. And that was just me playing around in the microphone. And that goes back to that. Have fun. Don't feel or don't be afraid to sort of sit there in the microphone and make your old, you know, cops and robber sounds that you used to do when you were playing as a kid. Cool. So now I can take this, and when I save it, I can save it as a project. And that's going to be an Audacity project. And if you have multiple tracks, maybe you layer on additional sounds. You know, like here, I could go back in and record another sound. You know, somebody dying during that recording. So now I play it. And that was pretty lame. So I'll just delete that track. But if I save this as a project, it'll remember that there's two tracks and it remembers their levels and all these other settings, right? The other choice that you have then is just to export this. And when you export it, you can export to a bunch of different file formats. I'll go ahead and spit it out as a WAV file here. And let's go back up to before sounds and we'll do the explosion.wav. All right. You can add in the metadata if you want. I'm not going to mess with it here. And now I've spit a WAV file out of this. Pretty cool. All right. Notice that you can also export as an MP3. Just be aware that to export as an MP3, in fact, let's go pull up in the Audacity site here, audacity.sourceforge.net. You'll notice that there's a link here for other Audacity downloads for Windows. And in there, in order to export MP3 files, you'll need to download and install this lame MP3 encoder. And that's going to put a lame DLL in a directory on your disk. And the first time you export from Audacity, it'll ask you, hey, where's that lame DLL? You go point it to it, and then Audacity can export MP3 files. Cool. So anyhow, but I've done that, so I can come back in. Make sure I'm in the right directory. I am. Explosion.mp3. And save. And again, do the metadata if you like. But so now when I go look in that directory, I've got a WAV version of my sound. I've got an MP3 version of my sound. I'm good to go. Right? So that's Audacity. Awesome tool. Play around with it. Have fun. Now, remember I said that that's a waveform editor, right? So I couldn't go back in there and say, gee, I wish I'd done that explosion with, you know, not my voice, but maybe with, you know, me clinging two pans together or something. You can't just completely change the source sound. You can apply effects, but you can't change the original sound itself, right? So that's where tools like sequencers come in. So I'm going to go back over here to my browser, and this time I'm going to open up soundation.com. This is a web-based sequencer that you can start with for free. There are certainly pay-for versions, so you'll want to inspect those and see whether the free version does it for you or not. I'm already signed in, so I'm just going to go ahead and launch the studio here. So on the left, you'll notice that I have some different channels, and the audio channels I can load WAV or MP3 files into. But then I also have these cool little instrument channels down here. So I'm going to click on this instrument channel, and right now it's set up for simple, and I can change it to some different synthesizers if I want to, but I'm going to use the drum machine. And with the drum machine, you know, it's going to give you a way to emulate bass drums and snare drums and cymbals and all that kind of stuff. And so there's different drum kits that have different sounds for all those different drums in there. I'm going to leave it at the default, though, of kit 8. And if you really cared, you could come in here and tweak, you know, each drum's sound with these knobs. I'm not going to mess with that. So I'll close that up. And then I'm going to just click in this first measure right here next to this instrument, and or double click, and it'll create what's called a note clip, and then open up the editor for that note clip. And you'll notice along the left-hand edge is this piano key sort of bar. Now, if I click on the piano keys right now, you don't hear anything. And that's because the drum kit specifically only has sounds associated with certain piano keys. And they're all down here in this C3 octave. So when I click on C3, oh, you get kind of a cool, you know, electric bass sound. Okay, cool. I got snares, claps, hi-hats, open hi-hats, whatever, some tom-toms, etc. So there's my drum sounds, right? And so I could come in here and just start playing out some hi-hats. And I'm just going to, let's grab the pencil tool. Hi-hat. And I'm going to just draw a little hi-hat in it. And all I'm doing is clicking in. Oops, I want to move that. I can click and drag it. Or I could double-click on the original one to delete it and then click new where I want the new one at. But I'm just going to lay those out. Now, to play this, I could just hit the play button down at the bottom. And you see that line, that's called the playhead, and it's continuing on past the end right now. I don't want it to do that. So I'm going to hit pause or stop playing, rewind back to the beginning. And you'll notice this little yellow bar up here at the top of the track. That's sort of the loop section. I'm going to grab that and move it over just that first bar. You can resize it if you want to. You can make it loop different lengths and different start points. But I'm going to have it loop just that first bar. And then I'm going to make sure that this little button down here to loop is turned on. And let's try it again. Okay, cool. So now it's just going to play that little note clip, really anything that's in bar one across all of these channels over and over and over again. And now I can sort of start editing my beat, right? So let's lay in a bass drum. Cool. And maybe a snare over here. Maybe a clap. All right, cool. Maybe some tom-toms. And that simply, I've created a cool little bass beat, right? Or drum beat. So hopefully you see that, gee, you can do that. All I did is click in some squares. I mean, it's not rocket science there. And play around with it. You don't like something, delete it, right? You go, wow, that clap sounds pretty 80s. You know, I could just double click on it to remove it and the clap's gone. Maybe put a snare back in or a wood clock or block, sorry. Yeah, that was kind of lame. All right, so we'll move it back down to the clap. I'm an 80s guy. All right, cool. So have fun with them, and there's my drum beat. All right, so let's stop playing this. And you could bring the volume down on that if you want to change the mix. And in fact, I'm going to come in just so you don't have to hear that music so loud every time. I'm going to show the master channel, and that's going to let me – let's delete this one audio. I know I'm not going to need that. I'm going to be able to bring the entire audio down on that. So when I play it, it should be quieter now. All right, hopefully not as overwhelming for you to listen to. Cool. All right, so we've got that. Now, as I close this note clip out, notice that I could take it and stretch it. It just sits there and repeats, and I could say, you know what, actually, I want to have four full bars of that drum beat, and then maybe come in and make a new one for yet some other drum beat, you know, where I play some different drum rhythm or something like that for that, maybe for the break in the song or something. But I'm going to select that and delete it, whatever. So there's this repeating drum beat back there. Now, I could add in another instrument channel if I want to. The plus button down here makes an audio channel. This one makes an instrument channel and lets me choose another synthesizer. And you'll notice that I could pick from different synthesizers. And within each synthesizer, there's different settings that you can use. I'm going to just leave it at the default and open up another audio clip. And now that this keyboard... Right, I've got sort of a full range of sound there with whatever that synthesizer sound was. So I'm going to make a really lame song here. You're not going to want to copy this, I'm sure. We'll just go some basic music theory here. 1-3-5s, right? Just one note, three notes up, five notes up. And make a simple little... up and down sound there. Let's play that and see what it sounds like. Okay, all right. Cool, but boy, that gets irritating pretty quick, doesn't it? All right, so let's go ahead and stop it. And down here, again, I could extend this and have it, you know, play over and over again. I don't want that. Let's maybe just copy. So I'm going to hold down the Alt key while I drag, or you could just, you know, Control-C, Control-V to create a copy of that clip if you wanted to out there. And let's expand this loop section up here. Oops, sorry, I'm dragging it. Let's make it longer so it fills all four of those bars up. And now let's play that. All right. So probably not the music that you were looking for there, but hopefully the point of that is that you can do that. You can get in, you can create music and sounds for use in your games. And that's pretty simplistic, so I'm going to go ahead and delete these channels and look at audio channels instead. And with audio channels, you can actually pull in existing WAV files. So you could pull in sounds that you like and add them into these channels and play them over and over or repeat them or whatever. But they help you out by giving you a library of existing sounds that you can use. In fact, if I come into electronica here, you'll notice there's two subfolders, a 125 and a 130. And that has to do with the beats per minute. Notice down here my song is defaulting to 125 beats per minute. The more beats per minute, the faster the song is, right? Because there's more beats per minute, no duh. But if I open up 125, you'll notice that there's a ton of different WAV files. And notice most of the sounds are nice enough to start with the beats per minute, so you can match up to them. And in fact, even a key that the music's in. So if you grab two different ones, as long as they're both in the key of C, at least they won't musically clash, although they might not be the same melody, but you know they'll be in the same key. But so you could click on one of these and hit the speaker down below and preview that sound, right? And if you hit auto audition, whenever you click on one, it just automatically plays it. All right. So there's that loop. Play around there. Notice there's ones for different beats. There's synthesizers. There's organ sounds, whatever. So I've played around enough to know that I kind of like this guy right here. Let's play it. Cool. And so I'm going to go ahead and drag that one over and place it into channel one there. And notice that the sound file itself takes up enough time for four of the bars that are up there. I'm actually going to extend that out so it fills up eight of the bars that are there. And then another one that I liked was Beat Kicker. All right, so I'll drag that one up, and we'll get just four bars of that. And then I want another copy. Now, I'm starting to get out past the end. I can zoom out to see a little more of that timeline if I want to. Maybe not quite so much. All right, that's good. And so I'm going to Alt copy or drag this guy across. And then there's one other one that I liked, which was this Kong. There we go, Kong hat clav, right? Alright, cool. So I'm going to drag that guy up and drop him in there. Cool. Alright, so now I've got some synthesizer sounds. I want my song, right? So let's play this guy. Alright, so I'm going to drag it over this. And this is going to be down on audio channel 2. So channel 1 is going to be my beats. In fact, you can even rename that. And then up top, this is going to be my, you know, melody, if you will, although there's not much of a melody. Just sort of some sounds going there. And I'm going to mix my melody up here. So there's some different synth sounds. Okay, that works. So we'll drag that in. I'm going to again pull the arpeggio over there. And then how about synth prog 4, this guy? Okay, so I'll drag that up. And then lastly, I want to have just some sort of layering on top, right? But let's listen to just a section of this right now at the beginning here and see what that sounds like. Kind of cool. All right. And so now I can come down. Let's grab a few other pieces under extra diverse here. Notice the beats per minute in the file name. I want to find one that's 125. So I'll scroll down until I see 125s. And here they were just nice enough to put the BPM in the name. But FX Tools 1, I know, Sounds kind of like a, you know, like a some sort of error tool or something. So I'm going to drag that over and drop it just right on top of that change. And then, it should snap in. It does a pretty good job of snapping where you want it to go. And then there's one other one, kind of like a rake in the yard or something. And that's actually up under here. And how do I know these were here? I just spent a lot of time playing, going through, listening to different sounds and going, oh, that one sounds kind of cool. I want to use that here, right? I could play it. Okay, I don't know what they're doing with that rake, but that's an actual recording of something. But I can drag that up. Imagine recording your dog. Drop your dog in there if you want, you know, whatever. And there you go. There's my song, right? So I'm going to go ahead and let's turn off the loop here. Actually, we'll loop it. We'll go ahead and loop the entire section, though. And let's listen to this guy. So you may or may not like that music. I don't know, whatever. It's just using the sounds that are in there to create something that maybe I could use as a background loop at the back of my game, right? So I'm going to decide I'm good with that. Now, in Soundation, I can actually save that. And this is going to be tied up to your account, but I'll just call this my demo song and hit save. And now that's saved up actually into my Soundation account, so I can open that back up later. But I actually want to now export that out as a WAV file, right? So I'm going to hit that. And it tells me that it's ready to go. I'll hit save. And out to my demo folder here. C:\. Game on. There we go. Demos before sounds. And I'll just, you know, call it background music or something. And it should finish exporting there. Oh, I didn't give it a .wave. Sorry. That was my bad. There we go. And let's play with Windows Media Player here. Cool. All right. So I've got my background music. Cool. So the point of that demo then is I showed you a few different tools there. We saw the SFXR. Really easy way to create simple, quick sound effects, Audacity to edit existing sounds or to create your own, and then tools like Soundation to create song loops that you can actually play as background music. And my goal there is to help you remove the fear of creating sounds yourself, right? Go play, have fun, make some sounds. Remember my explosion sound or my daughter making the pigeons quack or whatever. Have fun with them. Play around with effects. I think you'll find that you can actually create some pretty usable sounds that you either end up using in the actual game or at least get you through your development cycle. Awesome. So in this last section, we're going to take a look at creating graphics. We've seen that you can create your own sounds. And hopefully you'll see here that you can also create your own graphics. So one of the first things you need to understand as you deal with graphics is the different types of graphic formats. And so we start out talking about bitmap images. And with a bitmap image, every pixel in the image, every dot is described with a specific color and possibly with an opacity or an alpha, meaning how much can you see through that pixel. And so as you create a bitmap image, you create it at a specific size. You tell it, you know, how many pixels wide and how many pixels high is that image going to be? And, you know, again, what's the color for each one of those pixels? And because it's a specific finite set of pixels, scaling can be an issue. Now, you can scale it down because we can simply discard the extra pixels that we don't need. But as you get to scaling it up, we've got a problem because new pixels have to be created from scratch or interpolated. Or we simply make the old pixels bigger, you know, we turn them into bigger squares. And so because of that, they end up looking blocky or pixelated when they're scaled up too large. So you want to make sure that you target a bitmap at the appropriate size. Now, as you save bitmaps, you tend to get them back in file formats like JPEGs or PNGs, BMPs and GIFs. You know, those are common bitmap file formats. And the tools that you can use include things like Photoshop, or I've been using an open source tool a lot called GIMP, and I'll open that up in the demo here. The other type of graphics that you deal with are vector images. And with a vector image, the various shapes are described using vectors, or really a mathematical description of the lines that make up your shape. And every vector can have a color and a fill and a thickness and different ends on the, you know, arrows and all that kind of stuff. And because they're vectors, they can be edited and reshaped. You can scale them up or scale them down without losing quality, right? So scaling down is no problem, but also as I scale up or even just zoom in on the image, it maintains that crisp, sort of clean vector feel. The file formats that you deal with vectors are either AI, that's a Adobe Illustrator file format, CDR is a CorelDRAW, WMF and EMF are sort of some standard vector formats, but SVG is a really cool one. It's actually an XML file that describes all the vectors, and I've been using a tool called Inkscape that works with SVGs, but there's other tools out there, CorelDRAW, Illustrator, etc. But as you create graphics for your games, vector tools like Inkscape are a great choice because they let you edit it. You know, you can group, you know, all the elements, for example, in this character's hat and move them around. You can scale them, etc., and really have a truly customizable character that you can use in your games. But once you have them looking the way that you want in your vector tool, you'll then turn around and export them out into a bitmap format like a JPEG or a PNG at the desired size for your game. As you do that exporting, then you're often, you know, having to choose, do I send this out as a JPEG or as a PNG? And one of the things you need to be aware of is those different file formats support for transparency. So, for example, on the slide here, you can see sort of this checkerboard field, which is the background of some image. And you'll notice that if I were to drop a JPEG in there, JPEGs don't support transparency. The entire box that's consumed by the JPEG image has to be filled in with some color. And you can't see through the JPEG to the things that are behind it. PNGs, on the other hand, do support transparency. They can have an alpha channel on each pixel that determines how transparent each pixel is and allows you to see through to things that are behind the PNG. You can even make translucent things where you can kind of see through them with PNGs. So because of that, PNGs tend to be a file format that we use a lot in games, especially for our game characters and stuff, because of that support for transparency. Well, then, so what are JPEGs good for, right? Well, JPEGs are great for backgrounds, large images, because JPEG has a great compression algorithm that can make large images very small in file size. So JPEGs are great for that as long as you don't need transparency. PNGs, on the other hand, then, are great for everything else, all the things that you put onto those backgrounds, right? So like in a platformer game, it's your character or the coins or the enemies or the platforms. Those are all good candidates for PNGs because you can see through the PNG where it has no pixels. So as you think about creating game characters then, and I use Inkscape a lot as the tool of choice for myself, you find that there's different sort of techniques that you might use to create a character. And I mentioned earlier this great blog from Chris Hildebrand, 2dgameartforprogrammers.blogspot.com. And he's got some fantastic tutorials up there. And that's really kind of how I learned to create game characters myself. And with Chris's method, you kind of just start with primitive shapes, circles and rectangles. And, you know, you end up deforming them into the shapes that make up your actual character. And so you find that as you create each character, you end up making a lot of the same circles and rectangles, etc. And so to simplify my life, I created a starter template that had sort of the basic shapes for a character. And it has a segment for every body part in there. So if I expand that out, you can actually see all the individual vectors that make up that character. And they're articulated. So for example, the leg is grouped together. So you can rotate the leg as a unit or even drill into that group and get, you know, the shin and the foot to rotate separately in there as well. And so if you are interested in a copy of that, you can get it from the URL there on the slide, aka.ms/BSCT for Brett Statham Character Template. Again, want to give full credit to Chris for his inspiration on that. With that file, that'll actually take you to a blog post where you can download the zip. But in SVG, if you have a file that you like as a template, you can save it to the path they're on the screen, your program files, x86, Inkscape, share templates, and it will then be available as a new file template when you do file new inside Inkscape. So if you like my templates, you can download them and even save the SVGs that are in there. Now, part of the download also includes an animated version of that character walking. Right, so there's a different frame for each one of the positions in an 8-step walking animation. And so that brings us into, with games, a lot of what you're creating is what's called sprite sheets. And that's where you make a single image, a single PNG, that's made up of a bunch of smaller sub-images or just frames. And you'll do yourself a favor by keeping them, you know, the same size each frame, right? So, for example, in my template, I kind of use a 512 by 512 square as sort of my frame size. Remember, with vectors, you can zoom in or zoom out. You can export it any size you want. I just try to keep it consistent within the vector itself. But with an animation or a sprite sheet, this is kind of like an old flipbook style of animation where you draw the individual poses and then you sort of iterate through them quickly. So here, I'll hit my play button here. And you can sort of see my character below animate as we flip through the different frames that are in that. So in Inkscape, what you're doing is sort of building the individual frames, positioning things so that you hope when you end up playing the final animation, it kind of looks like, you know, some reasonable movement out there. All right, so let's go take a look at using Inkscape to create some game graphics. So I'm going to go ahead and start up Inkscape here. Remember, this is a free tool. You can download it from inkscape.org. And it's a vector tool. So over here in my toolbox, I've got a ton of different shapes that I can use. Circles and rectangles and Bezier curves are really, I think, the only shapes that I'll use in this demo here. Let me start out with a circle. Now, in fact, this is really an ellipse. So as I draw it, you'll notice that I can really make it, you know, oval, you know, horizontally, vertically, whatever, and kind of reshape it to any sort of ellipse that I like. If I want to make sure it stays a circle, I can hold down the control key, and as I drag it, it'll constrain it, you know, to being a good circle in there. So let's go ahead and take that, and notice I can fill this up with some different colors down here. So we'll give it sort of a skin tone. This is going to be the head for this construction worker character that I want to create for this game. And so in here, I can see that. Now, notice he's also got this thick black outline around him. In Inkscape, we call that the stroke. Down here in the lower left-hand corner, you can see the fill is that pinkish fill, and the stroke is that black stroke. And I could double-click on the stroke and have it open up the fill and stroke panel, and you could change the paint. You could even have it be a gradient or, you know, linear or radial. You can fill it with patterns or different things like that. Well, actually, in this case, it turns out I don't want a stroke at all. So I'm just going to do the no paint, hit the X, and that'll just remove the stroke. Now, another way that I could have done that is simply, zoomed in, didn't mean to. But over here, notice that I've got this color palette. And if you left click on a color, it changes the fill of the currently selected item. Let's change that back to the pink. In fact, I can just edit undo to put that back. If you right click on a color, you can choose, are you trying to set the fill or the stroke? And in fact, there's an X. So I'm going to right click on the X and set the stroke to nothing. And that'll remove the stroke down there for me. So a number of different ways that you can go about doing that. But now remember, I said that these are vectors. And so when I pick this thing, I can shrink it down and notice that it keeps this sort of elliptical behavior. But I'm really just squashing it in this case. And so this is with the select tool over here. When I pick on an item, I can resize it, stretch it wider or proportionally here, whatever. Let's go undo all of those, get it back to a nice good circle. I was just doing Control Z to undo, Control Y to redo, right? So I got it back to a nice circle there. But I can grab this node tool over here and notice that I get some little nodes or handles that I can grab. And that's going to let me stretch the ellipse taller. I can stretch the ellipse wider. Or notice this one actually looks like a little circle. And when I click on that and drag it, I can actually create pie slices or arcs. If the node tool is outside the circle, I get a pie slice. If it's inside the circle, I get an arc, right? And so you can play around with that. But notice that sort of indicates sort of the mathematical nature of this vector, recognizing that it is an ellipse and that you can have segments and arcs and all that good stuff. Cool. So up here on the tool, I'm going to go back to the circle tool and put it back to a full circle there so that it's not an arc or a segment. But let's go ahead and instead convert this thing to a path. So with it selected, I'll make sure that that's the currently selected item. And then from the path menu, set object to path. And what that's going to do is turn it into really just a curve or one vector that happens to look like a circle. And now notice I have four control points on this thing. And I can grab any one of them and distort it. This is no longer an ellipse. This is now just a shape that happens to look like a circle. So that's pretty cool. And I can grab these control points and start to deform the circle and play around with it however it is that I like, right? In fact, if I wanted to, I can even add more nodes. I can point to a segment. You can curve an entire segment if you want to, but I'm just going to double click on this segment to add a node, and I could do it down here too. And that'll give me more control points, a finer grain control over the shape of that vector. Another way to do that is to simply select two nodes or a bunch of nodes and hit the add button up here to add additional nodes between the selected ones. And so notice very quickly I've got a ton of control points. Oops, they're all selected. Let's deselect. I picked just one of them, a ton of control points that I can use to just modify that. Cool. All right, let's get back to just the four. That's all I really need here. So now I can play around with this guy. Let's, in fact, go make another circle. Now I could go draw another circle, and you'll notice Inkscape sort of uses the last fill color I picked. Remember, I filled that guy red, and then I undid it. So let's go make this ellipse match the color. And notice I've got this eyedropper down here. So I can select the target item, and then use the eyedropper to click on the source item on that right now. But okay. But here's another ellipse. And again, I'm going to path, object to path. And now I can come in and sort of distort this thing. I'm going to use this as the nose on my character here. When I click on the thing to select it once, this is with the select tool, I can click a second time, and then I can rotate the item that I have picked. And the little crosshair there is the center of rotation. It's around that crosshair. So in fact, if I move the crosshair out here, you'll notice that it's going to rotate around that crosshair. That's the center of rotation. Let me control Z to undo that. I'm going to rotate this guy over so he looks kind of like a nose, and I'm just going to overlap it with the existing shape. So sort of creating a cartoon character with this big, you know, roundish nose sticking out of it here. Cool. All right. So there's my head and my nose. Now I need some eyes. And again, we're going to use ellipses. So I'll grab the circle tool, drag another circle, and fill it black. Cool. And we'll just position it over here somewhere. Maybe scale it down a little bit. Maybe rotate it to touch. There we go. There's my eyeball. And notice these are just ellipses. And I'm going to control D or edit duplicate. Notice the keyboard shortcut for that, control D. And so now I've now got another copy of that. And I can move it over here and maybe size it up a little bit because it's a little bit closer to me. Cool. So there's my eyeballs. Now, notice that I've got a zoom tool. I can zoom in on this. And I need these eyes to have a little more character. Right now, they look kind of like holes in his head. So I'm going to duplicate this eye again. So I just hit control D on the keyboard to make a copy of that. And then I'm going to fill the copy with white. And now I'm going to resize it. Now you can grab these resize handles. And again, it's going to let you distort the shape. I'm going to control to drag it and keep the aspect ratio, just make it smaller, right? And then I can move this white of the eye outside just a little bit. And you'll notice that, again, that doesn't look quite right. I really want the white of the eye to be look like it's kind of inset inside the black. And so here's another one of my favorite things about vector tools, and that's Boolean operations. So I'm going to take another copy of this black eye. So I've got a new copy of the black eye, and then I'm going to hold down the shift key and pick the white eyeball, I guess, if you want. So I've got the two of those things selected. And once you have two paths selected, you can then perform different Boolean operations on those paths, unions, intersections, differences, subtractions, you know, whatever. So in this case, I want the area that's described by both the black and the white eye, just the place where they intersect. And that's what I get back from that. Oh, that's kind of cool. So I'm going to repeat the process, duplicate, fill it with white, shrink it down, and overlap it. Duplicate the back again, pick the white of the eye, and intersect the two. Bingo. Pretty cool. So now I can zoom out, and I'm using the control key on the keyboard and the mouse wheel to zoom in and out on this. Of course, you could just use the zoom tool. Zoom in and out, full size, whatever. And it notices it's starting to look kind of like a game character, or a cartoon character, at least. Let's give him some eyebrows, so yet another ellipse. Oh, and that one got filled white. Remember, that was the last color. So sometimes that can be a little confusing. Just make sure that you keep the shape. If you accidentally move off it, oh, where'd my eyeball go? You know it was over here somewhere. You can just sort of use the select tool and sort of drag a box around where you know that element was, and it'll find it for you there. But let's make that be like a dark brown or something, maybe a little darker brown. Yeah, that works. And I'm going to zoom in on that guy. Let's first convert him to a path. Zoom in a little bit. And again, I can grab these nodes here and just start distorting this thing. Pretty cool. All right, so that looks kind of like an eyebrow. Maybe a little big. So I'll just distort it. And notice that I'm not being really particular. This is our cartoon character. I mean, come on. It's not like I'm trying to draw, you know, a engineering diagram here. Cool. So I've got one eyebrow. Let's go ahead and duplicate that again. Control D to duplicate. And notice now I can do things like flipping horizontally or vertically. So I'm going to flip it horizontally and then bring it over here, rotate it. It's a little big for that other eye. So let's shrink it down a bit. And you know what? I'm okay with it sticking off the edge of the guy's head a little bit. That's perfectly fine for me. In fact, let's maybe even shrink that guy down some. All right. So notice I'm just dragging these things around, positioning them, et cetera there. All right. So we've got eyebrows. How about a mouth? Let's give the guy a mouth. So I'm going to grab the original head and simply distort, drag this down a little bit to give him somewhat of a chin. Maybe widen the back of that out a little bit. And, yep, I need yet another ellipse. Notice I'm doing this whole thing so far with just the circle tool and some deforming. Pretty simple stuff. I'm going to fill that in white, drop it down here for the mouth. Maybe rotate a touch. Looks good. And, again, we'll deform. Oops, it's not a path. Path, object to path. There we go. And, all right, looking good. So there's the mouth. And I'm going to duplicate that and fill it with a dark red. Right now, notice that the red one's covering up the white one. I'll zoom in on it. And I'm going to pick the red item and just use the keyboard mouse, or sorry, the keys on the keyboard, keyboard mouse, to just move that red mouth down a little bit. And, you know, that's probably fine the way it is. If you want it to be inside the original shape, again, remember my intersect, I can copy the original mouth. Pick the new one, and then intersect them so that it sort of fills in the old mouth. Cool. All right, so there's my mouth. Let's give this guy's a construction worker, so let's give him a hat. So, sorry, back over here, we'll grab the ellipse tool. And notice this time I've got the ellipse tool picked, and just before I draw, I'm going to tell it the target color I want it to be. So this is going to fill this ellipse in. Yellowish for me as I draw it. So sort of a yellow construction worker hat or hard hat, if you will. And let's rotate this so it looks like it's sitting on top of his head. That works. Cool. And I want another one of those things. I'm going to duplicate this, shrink it down a little bit, and bring it up. And then I'll use the elliptical behavior to sort of fatten that ellipse up some. That was maybe a little much. All right. I know we don't look like a hat yet. Let's confirm it to a path. And now I can grab these control nodes and let's get rid of that sort of inset down at the bottom. Starting to look a little bit more like a construction hat. And then maybe move it down just a touch. And so, you know, notice I'm just playing around, trying to get the shape to look the way I want it to. All right. Good enough. Right. Maybe a little wide. All right, so there's my construction hat, beautiful hat. And now I can take the dome of the hat and the brim of the hat. I'm holding down the shift key as I click on the second item, and that picks both of them. And then from the object menu, I'm going to tell it to, group, or just control G, group those two things together. So now I can move them or even rotate them, you know, as a single unit. Pretty cool. All right, so in fact, let's keep it out of the way here. And the other thing I want to draw is some hair. Now, this one I'm actually going to use this Bezier curve for. Bezier curves let you create sort of these curvy lines that have control points on them. And then you can come back in and grab the control points and sort of change the curve, if you will. Right? But I'm just going to delete that. And I'm not actually going to try and draw the curve. I'm just going to let it create jaggy lines here for me. So we'll start up here. And I'm just sort of simulating a hairline here. Let's make sure we give him some room for an ear. All right. And so there's sort of the shape of the hair. If you want to fix any of those nodes, this one got a little crazy out there. Just trying to create hair that covers up the guy's head, right? And obviously, his hair is not going to be all scraggly, jaggy like that. So I'm going to use the node tool, select all the nodes in that vector I just made. And then up here, I can reshape those nodes. I can make them be corners or smooth, symmetrical. I'm just going to make them all smooth, and that rounds them all out for me. And let's fill them up with the same brown that we stuck into our eyebrows over there. Pretty cool. So there's the hair. And now if I drag the hat back on, I've got a problem. The hat's behind the hair. So vectors have also this idea of Z order. How far in or out of the screen are they? And so I can take this guy and move him to the bottom of the Z order or to the top. And now he's on top of the hair. Cool. So I can position that around, maybe make the hat a little bit bigger, rotate it, you know, make it look like it's sitting on the back of his head. And hey, there's my worker. It looks like I've got a black stroke on the hair, so I'm going to remove that set stroke. That's a choice you'll want to make as you create your game characters. You know, do you use outlines on them or not? In this case, I'm not going to use outlines. Cool. So I've got this head. Let's add just a little bit of detail on this guy. I'm going to use a Bezier curve here and create a little triangle up here on the hat. And grab the Bezier curve. And when you grab a segment, you can actually just bend the segment simply by grabbing it and dragging it. Right. So we'll do that. And I'm going to start it out the same color as the hat. So I'll fill that up. But then I'm going to double click on that. And notice you can change the red, the green, the blue, CMYK, different color modes. I really love HSL, and that's the hue, saturation, and luminosity or lightness, right? And so I'm going to grab this and just darken it up a little bit. And that lets me make just a slightly darker version of a color. And similarly, we'll get rid of the stroke, just like we did on the other ones. And this is kind of creating a little bit of detail on the hat. So I'll duplicate that, flip it horizontally, and rotate it a little bit. Maybe rotate a little bit more. Cool. And let's do one more duplicate. We'll stick it over here in the middle. And reshape the nodes to maybe come out instead of in. All right. So there's just a little bit of detail on the hat, right? So now I can come back out here. I'm going to take the original hat, right click on it and ungroup it. And then I can pick those three new sort of detail sections and we'll group, right click. Let me group there for some reason. Okay. Object, group all of those together into one nice big group that I can now move around. So there's my hat. Okay. So like I said, we could sort of continue this process building additional elements. And you'll notice that I'm having to come up with all the different pieces of this character myself. He looks pretty good the way he is. Let me copy this out. And I mentioned that I have these templates up on my blog. You can download them. Let's go pull this up. Come on, fat fingers. BSCT for Brett Statham character template. And that'll bring you off my blog post, and it talks about the character template as well as that animation template that I was talking about that sort of simulates the walking character. So you can download it from there, but I've already got them downloaded, and so those are in my assets folder. Let's come back over here, file open, and down on the assets, templates, and here's my character template. Ooh, and it looks like I've accidentally saved over that previously, so we won't use that one. Let's go ahead, and I've already got them saved into my Inkscape template, so I'll just use that one. So you can tell I've cheated and worked on this demo ahead of time. All right, but so here's my template, and if I look inside here, one of the other cool things about vector tools is the ability to do layers. So I'm going to have it show the layers panel for me. And I see that there's actually a number of layers in here. I've got the character layer, and that's where I want you to draw your character, right? And that's, notice that I've already got a shape in there for the head and for the neck and for the torso and all that good stuff, right? Underneath that, though, notice when I moved the head, you could see a faint version of where it used to be. And that's this wireframe layer. It's just a copy of the original shapes, but with the opacity on that layer knocked down so that they aren't as easy to see. And that layer is locked, meaning you can't grab items on that layer. If you unlock it, you can. You could come grab that faint circle. But I had it locked so that it was really just there as a reminder of, hey, here's what the original shape kind of looked like. So in fact, with that said, I'm going to, well, the bounding box is just a transparent rectangle or square. It has no fill and no stroke, but it's the size of this 512 by 512 shape. And notice up here, I can see the width of 512 and the height of 512. So that's good. And then there's also some notes over here, and these are just kind of my instructions and details about the layer. About the template. So I'm going to delete the original head, and let's go back and grab the head that I created, and we'll group that whole thing together as one big head, copy it, and then back over here, paste it in as the head, and just sort of position it. By the way, when I pasted that in, I wanted to make sure that the character layer was the currently active layer so that I knew it went onto the right layer. But now I can sort of resize it, get it positioned down there, let's go this way. All right. And it's wanting to snap to these blue lines. These blue lines are what we call guidelines, and they're really handy when you're trying to get things positioned precisely. But in this case, it's snapping and I don't want it to. So I'm going to tell it to just not snap. And now I can control this guy a little more freely. Control mouse wheel to zoom in. And just play around with this guy until you're kind of happy with its size and its position over the existing character template. Cool. All right, now I can just come in here and start playing around with this stuff. Let's grab the neck. I'll make the neck be the same color as the head, and maybe darken that fill up a little bit. Okay, that's good enough. Whatever. In there. And I can then start, doing some things here to, like, color up my character there. So, give him an olive green shirt, maybe deform the shape of the shirt, give him a beer gut, something like that. Give him a bigger butt. Woo! not a weird one. There you go. You can smooth these nodes out as you want, So basically, just have fun with it, right? If you get a shape that you like, you might want to save it so you can always come back and get it back later on. You see I'm just taking existing shapes, deforming them, having fun with it. Boolean operations are another great tool that you can use. I'm going to go ahead and fill a rectangle up here down along the bottom. I didn't show you rounded rectangles yet. Let's do that. Let's go make a rectangle. So when you draw a rectangle, it's nice and square. This is a vector, so I can grab the corners and resize the rectangle. But this round corner here lets you make the rounded corners of the rectangle itself. And you'll notice that you can have it different degrees of roundness along both sides. If you want to make them both the same, just hold the control key while you drag those, and it'll keep the roundness along both edges consistent out there. But that's a great way to make sort of a little rounded rectangle. And then you can turn that into a path. And just edit those nodes, to your heart's content. Cool. So pretty easy. That's sort of how I made the body there. That was just a rounded rectangle that I sort of tweaked the nodes on there a little bit. But let's go back and make yet another rectangle. Notice it's remembering the roundness from before. You can always just, while you have the rectangle tool selected on a rectangle, click this little box to get rid of the roundness. That'll square it up for you. I'm going to convert that guy to a path so I can distort the edges and drag this edge down a little bit and just position this guy up. Let's recolor him so that we can see where he is there. Notice he's kind of overlapping the torso there. And I'm going to use this to create a division line between the upper body and the lower body. So I'm going to grab the torso in the back, and I'm going to shift click on this thing that's sitting over the front, and I'm going to tell it to divide the back item by the front item, division. And notice now it sliced the bottom off versus the top. So it divided that torso into half. And now I can grab his bottom and go, fill his pants up. Let's give him a denim blue color for his pants or whatever down there. Cool. Now, notice that my character here, I've got arms, and these arms are currently grouped together, but they're really just a bunch of shapes. And when I select it, notice that the center of rotation is up here on the shoulder. And so I can rotate this arm, or if you double click and drill into a group, you can get to the forearm and rotate it, and it's got its own little center of rotation, and that circle there is kind of acting as an elbow. Now, one of the problems that you'll have is that Inkscape forgets the center of rotation on things. As you move them or transform the overall objects, they get modified, right? So if I move the arm itself and then go back into the forearm to rotate it, notice that the center of rotation got totally whacked out. So you want to make sure that whenever you drill in to rotate something, you pay attention to where its center of rotation is. And don't worry about it being extra super precise. These are cartoon characters here. Cool? All right, so I could sort of repeat this process and just simply coloring things and reshaping things, etc., and coming up with a game character, that I liked here, right? So let's go open up one. And from my demos after graphics, I've got my completed construction worker here. So let's just open him up. And notice that that was really just the same stuff that I was just working on, just playing around with some additional shapes, changing some colors, distorting some things. I built simple rectangles for the pocket, simple rounded rectangle for the hammer, etc. All basic steps that you can take yourself. Once you have this guy ready, then we're now ready to animate him and make him walk. So that was the other template that I made available. It's my walking template. And I've got one already saved up here. So I'll just open up my walking template. And again, this guy's all layered out for you. Let's zoom out so we can see the 8 frames. This is an 8-step walk. Let me zoom back in. And the wireframe just shows you the target position for your character in each one of those step frames out there. So what I can do then is come back over and grab my original character. And I want to make sure to get that bounding box. Remember that transparent square that was out there at 512 by 512? That's my frame boundary. And if I continually copy the entire character with its frame, that'll keep it consistently positioned as I make duplicate frames. So I'm going to control C to copy that guy. And back over here then in the walking template, I want to make sure that from the layers, the character layer is the selected layer there. Let's zoom out a little bit. And I'm going to control V to paste in that copy. And notice he's totally off whack here. I can reposition him though. And the snap is back on in this new file. And notice he snaps right into the grid that I have there. Another way to do that though is to say, hey, look, let's take this whole group and position it at 0 along the X and 0 along the Y. And you can do that right up here. With this group selected, I can just say, put it at X 0 and Y 0, enter. And that'll make sure that it's precisely positioned right there for me. Cool. And so now I can come in here and just start grabbing the different body parts, right? If you want to see the wireframe, you can hide the character layer. Just turn off the eyeball to see where the wireframe says its parts should be. And you'll notice that, in fact, the wireframe even tilts the body in. I'm not going to mess with tilting the body, but you certainly can as you do it. As you walk, you tend to lean forward and back, and you even go up and down. And so the template emulates that. I'm just going to play around with the arms here, arms and legs. So let's first grab this front arm and rotate it back a little bit. There we go. Drill into it. So I double-click on the group to get in and then pick the forearm. And its center of rotation is off. We'll make sure its rotation is on the elbow there and rotate it down. So that's one of the problems with Inkscape is just sort of getting that rotation correct as you drill in, right? The other thing is once you drill into a group, you're still editing that group. You want to make sure to click off on a completely separate thing. Like before I was in the arm, so I'm clicking up on the head, to get me totally out of the arm. The reason why is if you stay into the group and then you forget, and you duplicate it or something like that, now all of a sudden when I move away, that copy of the hand is stuck inside there, and that is not what I meant to do, right? So just be careful as you drill into a group. Let's control Z there. To make sure that you get out of the group, simply click somewhere else on some other group outside of the one you were just editing. Okay, same thing here. I'm going to drill into this guy. We'll take his forearm, make sure it's centered on the elbow, and rotate it up. And then I'm going to grab the whole arm for this other character here. Let's make sure that a center rotation's on the shoulder. Now, this back arm can be hard to see, so you can always move it to the foreground so you can see where it's at. Get it positioned the way that you want it. And then when you're done, move it back to the back again. Cool. And then for the legs, let's grab his, which one is it? In the wireframe, the dark leg is the back leg, and the lighter one is the front leg. So I want the front leg here. Sorry, turn on my character again. The front leg needs to be forward, so we'll rotate that guy up a little bit, and then bring the foreleg, or the lower leg, down a little bit. Center of rotation on the knee. Bingo. And the back leg, bring it back a little bit, and bring his lower leg around some. Now, don't be afraid to just, you know, like, hey, if the leg isn't positioning up, go ahead and grab it and move it, you know, put it where the heck you want it. This is just animation. I mean, it's, again, this is not rocket science. So don't overthink it. Don't stress yourself out. Maybe while he's walking, maybe I want the hammer to swing a little bit so I could drill in here, grab the hammer, rotate it right there on the loop, drag it, you know, just rotate the hammer a little bit. So, you know, kind of cool. Play around with this. And so now that I've got this guy in this position, I can copy that frame. Control D, or just edit, duplicate. And remember, my grid is 512. Oops, looks like I'm in the group when I just did that. Remember, I twisted the hammer. I said, get out of the group before you do stuff. Yeah, so get out of the group. There we go. And then pick the whole frame. There we go. And duplicate it. Remember, my grid, though, is 512 pixels across. So I want this guy to stay at zero along the Y axis. I just need to move him over 512 pixels on the X, right? And the next one would be 1024 and then 1536, et cetera, as you duplicate these frames. And now I'm really just tweaking these different body parts. We'll swing the arm forward a little bit. I don't know why that rotated there. There's center rotation back on his shoulder. Okay, so remember I mentioned that Inkscape loves to forget centers of rotation and stuff. So pay attention to where those are. We'll swing this back arm a little bit, move the back leg back some. And that's the idea there, is that I'm simply moving body parts around to sort of match up to that wireframe behind the scenes. Notice here the foot looks a little low. Oops. So I'm just going to grab that whole leg and move it up some. Don't worry about matching the wireframe perfectly, though, either. I mean, again, have fun. Animate the way that you want. One thing I will show you here. Notice that the foot is slightly below. In fact, if you grab the leg, you can see it's at -3. On the Y. To make sure that your frame sizes all stay the same, I need to make sure that this is up inside that box. So it's got to be at zero or above, or it's going to make the frame too large. Cool. So anyhow, there we go. And now once that I've got this guy, you know, I'll just repeat that process. And again, let me go open up a completed version of this. Cool. So here's that same process, just finished out across all of those different frames. I could now select all of the frames in Inkscape. So I'm just dragging a box around all eight of them. And I want to verify that the height is 512 and the width is a multiple of 512. So that's making sure that my frames are all good there. And then from File, Export Bitmap, I can spit this guy out as a bitmap at some target height. Now, it's going to keep the aspect ratio the same. So if I say, hey, make it be 256 high, then it's going to be 8 times 256 for the width, right? And that's actually slightly off there. It should be 2048, but okay. Or you could say, hey, make it be 512, whatever, right? And you'll get the, it should be, it looks like I have something slightly off size there. In that. But anyhow, so there, you know, play around, make sure that your characters are all fitting nicely in that frame. I'm surprised I'm off there. Somewhere something's off. Yeah, I'd have to go back and figure out where all the ends are. It looks like I'm a little too wide, but that's all right. Good enough for the demo here. But basically, take that, File, Export Bitmap. And whatever your target height is, because they're squares, whatever you put in for the height, that's also going to end up being the width of each frame that gets exported out there because they're square, right? height and width are the same. And so whatever your game developer tells you, hey, or if you are the dev, whatever size your character needs to be, that's going to be what you pipe. You know, type in there. So let's say I want them 48 characters high or 48 pixels high. And then I pick the path that I want to export this out as. And, you know, I'll call them, you know, worker. This is a 48 pixel high and it's a strip. It's a, or a sprite sheet, if you will. And I'll export that out. Notice that Inkscape only lets you create PNGs. So I'll export that out. And when I drill into that directory, then demos before graphics, there's my worker. And if I double click on him, he actually wants to open it up in GIMP. So this is GIMP. This is that open source bitmap tool I mentioned. And I can zoom in on this and see my character. And notice how pixelated and blocky he is as I zoom in. But if I keep him at the original size, especially as he's animated within the game, that'll all make sense. Now, Daniel's going to pull that in. You'll actually get to see our construction worker walk as Daniel finishes up with some of the other demos there. Let me just really quick show you that you can take that original character and pose him out some different ways. So let's go open another one here. Oop, I did not mean to make a folder there. Sorry. Here I have him climbing. Now, this one I actually had to go, you know, build a new vector that shows him climbing from behind. So that was a new shape. But I could also take the existing ones and simply repose him. So here he is when he jumps, right? So I simply moved the legs out, rotated the arms around, you know, tilted the head back, et cetera there. For when he dies, notice those are also just single frames. When he dies, we don't animate him. He just, you know, his hat flips off and the tape measure and the hammer fell out and his eyes are red X's now and his legs are broken and pointing the wrong directions, et cetera there. So anyhow, hopefully that makes sense. I would then take that, you know, in this case, this character, let's get that window out of the way. You know, pick the 512 by 512 box, export it out of the target size that you want it to be, and you've got your sprite. All right. So hopefully that makes sense. Let's get back over to our slide deck and we'll wrap this session up. I've gone a little bit long. But remember that you can get a version of the demo files that I've used here up on the resources page. The URL's there on the screen. But in this session, we got a chance to go out and see some free assets that you can get off the internet and looked at some places where you can go to get those. A reminder, pay attention to the licensing and make sure that you adhere to it. Then we also talked about the ability to go in and create your own sounds. We saw that cool SFXR utility. We looked at Audacity and that cool Soundation sequencer on the web. And then lastly, we saw how to go about creating your own graphics. And so hopefully what you see there is that all I used was ellipses and rectangles, and occasionally where the shape didn't matter, that Bezier curve, right? And I just remember I drew scraggly lines. I mean, I wasn't even being that careful there. And use the tools, let them help you build those graphics. All right. Thank you very much for your time, and go forth and have fun creating assets for your games.